Cybersecurity is emerging as a major business risk. Just ask some of the stores that have been hit lately. Well, USIS, the government's main contractor for security background checks, had a big contract canceled. Why? A security breach exposed personal information about 25,000 Homeland Security employees. No matter that the agency discovered and reported the breach itself. Joining me to talk about strategies for not becoming the next USIS or Home Depot, Kirsten Tott and Roger Cressy, former feds and now principals of Liberty Group Ventures. Good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Tom.
All right. So let's talk about USIS. I mean, what are the lessons learned here? Because they did everything a company is supposed to do. They reported the breach, they discovered the breach and fixed it. And so yet they lost a contract. So there really is much more than just data loss risk here, isn't there?
There certainly is, Tom. And I think when your client is the government, obviously the importance of what you're protecting and securing is significant, and you have a heightened level of responsibility and accountability, and the safety net that you have is much smaller than if you're a retailer and you're going to be put under greater scrutiny, and the government can't afford to give second chances to companies that are doing that type of work. And so it becomes much more of an important issue than I think has been recognized or has been understood when you've got a situation like this one with USIS.
Roger, have you seen this kind of thing before? I mean, there's contracts get canceled, but I haven't heard of a cyber-related one causing something like this.
No, something like this, Tom, really is unique. But I think also the cyber attack was kind of the cherry on the top when it comes to how the feds were looking at USIS. And you look at the congressional investigations over things such as their background investigations and regarding Snowden and even Aaron Alexis, the Navy Yard shooter. So when you see the cyber breach on top of that, it almost is the last straw. And in that respect, it was even easier for the government to cancel the contract. It is somewhat precedent setting, and I think other government contractors will look at that and maybe draw two lessons. The first is the level of scrutiny on cyber attacks, as Kirsten said, has never been higher. And secondly, if you are not doing enough as a company to demonstrate that you are taking sufficient action to prevent such an attack, then you're really opening the door for the government and for Congress and others to say, well, you failed, and therefore we're going to penalize you.
But that seems like to go in contrast to what the administration policy is of information sharing, where events in the private sector get shared in some manner that protects corporate information with other companies in that sector and with the corresponding federal agency that might be the regulator of that sector, or else Homeland Security. So isn't that those two instincts seem to be in opposition to one another? Expose the fact that you had a breach and you get in trouble with the Federal Trade Commission or your customer, but then you're in violation of what the spirit of this whole information sharing idea is all about.
Well, Tom, it's two different things. So information sharing is typically used to help prevent attacks, and also it's used when there's been a state-sponsored knowing attack that you've got to be able to prepare for. And a breach is something different when you haven't done enough. And it is a fine line, but it's an important one. And information sharing is something that we as a country in the private sector have really struggled with over a period of time, because particularly private sector companies are concerned about doing so in the risk of offering up vulnerabilities. But there are sectors that do this tremendously well and have been very effective at it, like banking and finance. And we're starting to see other sectors facing breaches doing the same, such as the development of the retail ISAC and the oil and gas ISAC. And what becomes very important is the supportive environment that the infrastructure is being able to create for themselves. But that is different than when a company hasn't done enough and that gets exploited.
Well, the question then, I guess, becomes is what is enough? Who decides what's enough? And are there industry standards for what is enough? Because in some sense, you're never totally safe from a cyber attack.
Well, and Tom, I think the assumption should be that you're always being attacked, and you should also assume you've been penetrated. I mean, the smart companies that we talk to use that as a departure point from a cyber risk management perspective, they assume they've already been penetrated. And that mindset is what ensures that they are constantly trying to stay one step ahead of potential attackers, which means mitigating their risk, you know, protecting what they'll call their organizational crown jewels, the most important things that they have, be it intellectual property or other things. You're also seeing government contractors taking the same approach. I mean, there have been several very significant contractors in the news over the past few years who have suffered significant cyber attacks, and they're trying to recalibrate to ensure they're staying one step ahead. I do think the government has done some made some positive steps when it comes to information sharing. You just look at the Defense Industrial Base Initiative, where you have defense contractors working together with the government on tactics, techniques, and procedures that potential adversaries, especially state-sponsored adversaries, are using to penetrate their networks. That effort has been successful, but it's still really in its infancy. I think the real question, Tom, is can you use that template and that model and apply it to the private sector in a better way to get, as Kirsten said, beyond just the banking and finance and a couple other sectors that have done a half-decent job at this?
We're speaking with Roger Cressy and Kirsten Tott. They're principals of the Liberty Group Ventures. And so when you're looking for best practices and standards, one place to look is NIST, which has published numerous voluminous information about what to do for what are the accepted controls, what kind of controls you need in place. Do you think that companies, even contractors in the federal market, spend enough time consulting those documents, which if everybody did what was in them, we'd probably be a lot safer?
Well, Tom, the great thing about the framework is that the NIST framework, which was developed in response to the president's executive order last year, was that it was really written by the private sector and by private industry. And NIST facilitated the process, but it was the industries that were offering up their best practices and lessons learned, and then NIST aggregated those to create this framework. So there was a lot of input and a lot of awareness within the private sector on what to do. And, you know, it's still in its first phases and it's being implemented. But I do think in a case like that, that the private sector stepped up to become engaged because they recognized this is a great effort and a last best effort in many ways to mitigate regulation or even avoid it. Because if we're going to create something that's voluntary, that is a function of what we've done as industry, then it can be much more effective. And as NIST continues in this process, the private sector will continue to provide input, and it will be something that can really guide companies. And I think when you talk about what companies can do, what is reasonable, what are those efforts, you know, objectively looking at something like a framework or another process like that becomes a first step to make a reasonable effort.
And when you look at USIS, the situation there was the loss of personally identifiable information about individuals that happened to work for the government, and, you know, a fairly large number of them. But in other cases, it's intellectual property that technically belongs to the company, and yet it's crucial to the government. I'm thinking of the purported exfiltration of weapons systems designs and specifications from some of the big aerospace companies. And so you can't really cancel those contracts because you're so deep into one another, the government and the contractor, for a crucial program like a fighter plane. What happens in those cases, and what do you think is the best practices there?
Well, Tom, you're right. You can't cancel those contracts just on that alone. What you engage in is damage control to see what type of data was exfiltrated, how critical that data was to systems design, systems engineering, to the weapons development, the whole life cycle of a particular weapon system. What the Chinese, the Russians, and others are looking to do at the state level is to steal this intellectual property to basically leap ahead, to not have to invest their research and development in their own country, and take it from us and then be able to develop and deploy weapons capabilities where they don't have to spend years in development. I do think that defense, particularly the defense industry, is much more aware on these issues than it was 5-6 years ago, and they are taking more steps internally. You see a number of defense contractors who have developed solutions for the government now applying those same solutions to their own networks. One thing that we've been told by a number of different contractors is one area that they're particularly focused on now is the issue of mergers and acquisitions. Because if you think about it, from a threat perspective, an adversary might be looking at potential companies that could be acquired by the major defense contractors and deploying malware on those companies' networks to sit there and wait until that company is acquired. Their network is then incorporated into the larger defense contractors' network, and then the adversary is already in. That type of, you think about it, is two, three steps beyond what the day-to-day cybersecurity management issue is. That type of strategic approach is absolutely critical to think about how do you better manage your cyber risk in this area.
And can the government's efforts at continuous diagnostics and mitigation, the CDM effort, can that help in some of these areas?
Yes, and it does. It most certainly does. And I just to add on to what Roger was saying regarding the intellectual property, this is something we're also seeing in the private sector beyond just defense contractors. When you look at designs for cars or other types of intellectual property, it is to be leap ahead. And it becomes important for all companies to be aware of this and to be able to respond accordingly.
All right. So you don't want to be in the headlines. Roger
No.
Cressy and Kirsten Tott are principals of the Liberty Group Ventures. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.